You're tuned into Lightly on the Ground Radio on WRIR LP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. We are exploring our food system, which the Food and Nutrition Information Center of the National Agricultural Library says is everything from the farm to the table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hands to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. I'm Sunny Gardner, and our guests today are Scott Berger. Tell us about yourself.
My name is Scott Berger. I'm a volunteer with the local Sierra Club Falls of the James. I'm also active in the Green Party.
I'm Scott Price. I'm the policy director for the Alliance for Progressive Values. We are a Richmond-based, multi-issue not-for-profit.
And we're here today to talk about the uranium mining issue. There's a meeting that's going to happen between now and the broadcast time where the uranium mining group is going to propose that they might set some regulations before the ban is actually lifted. So we want to touch on some issues related to that. And we've been talking about various things, including what kind of music to use in our show. And one of the ideas they came up with was Godzilla, and me being pretty ignorant of pop culture, had to ask, why Godzilla?
Godzilla is actually one of the original anti-nuke environmental icons from 1950s Japan. He originally came out, and this myth behind him was that he was, if not a product of nuclear testing and nuclear waste, he was at least at least woken up by mankind's activity with the nuclear testing and nuclear bombing, including the wartime bombing of Japan. And so he was an incredibly serious figure when he first appeared in pop culture in 1950s Japan. And he came out and basically destroyed Tokyo for mankind's continued interest in harnessing this dangerous energy source.
Well, if I were careless about such things, I might say that Godzilla is still lurking out there considering the recent events in Fukushima.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure exactly where to go with that, but yes.
Maybe it'll appear at the Science Museum tomorrow night.
Possibly.
So what else is going on at the Science Museum? Who else is going to be there?
Well, we'll be there. APV will be there. And I know you guys will be there.
Right. It's the public meeting of Governor McDonald's Uranium Working Group, and there'll be a protest tomorrow. Arriving at 5:30, the meeting starts at 6 p.m., and that's at the Virginia Science Museum at 2500 West Broad Street.
And since we're speaking in the past, by the time this is broadcast, it was last night, and toward the end of the show, we're going to update on what actually happened there. The uranium mining issue was dealt with by a National Academy of Sciences study that came out December 12th of last year. And this task force, this uranium working group, was formed by the governor to further research what the scientists had come up with, which was that there were very serious concerns with mining uranium in the Virginia area. Now, why would that be?
Virginia is unique in as far as places where uranium can be found and mined. Most uranium is mined in arid, low-population areas. Virginia is, you know, a major population area. The mining in Pennsylvania County would impact the water table for a good part of the state.
And North Carolina.
And North Carolina, Lake Gadsden. It's, you know, the population is high, lots of people living in close proximity to this, and we are a very wet region. And because of global warming, we were talking about this earlier, Mid-Atlantic is prone to hurricanes to begin with. Mm-hmm. But we've seen, and I think Sandy was a wake-up call, hopefully, for a lot of the country.
That certainly was Superstorm Sandy.
Super Frankenstorm or Superstorm, I believe. Hopefully that was a wake-up for people that climate change is not something that's happening in the future or down the road. It's an ongoing, you know, thing, and we have real issues with this. It's going to make storms more frequent, and they're going to be stronger. And, you know, I think what Camille in 1969 dropped 31 inches of rain in central Virginia. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to open pit mining, of uranium? What does it mean to the storage facilities? They've been going back and forth of how they're going to do this, and, you know, every mitigation that they have, that the companies have for how they'll mitigate it, just raises more concerns and more problems.
Well, how about earthquakes? We don't have those too often, but I think just one would be enough.
Certainly. I mean, there was questions about the big earthquake we had, what, a year ago?
August.
August
a year ago.
that was almost surpassed Lake Anna's abilities to control once the earthquake hit the region, and it almost had some serious consequences at Lake Anna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean the thing too is
at the two power reactors there, the two nuclear reactors.
Yeah. The thing about this too is that when you talk about uranium and the tailings that come off of it, they're radioactive for enormous periods of time. So when we talk about storing the tailings off the mining, I forget. I think for every ton of ore they get, they produce 28,000 tons of slightly radioactive tailings, and that number is out of my head. It's not not specific, but it's close to that. And
yeah, I believe it was for every pound of yellow cake, they produce a ton of tailings.
That sounds about right. I mean, it's remarkable, and that all has to be stored somewhere. They also, to get most of this stuff, they're using chemical processes and they're producing sludge and things like that that all have to be kept often, in situations where severe weather or an earthquake or something could cause problems. And some of this stuff has to be kept for 1,000 years,
Yeah.
What they're talking about right now is proposed cells of 40-acre ponds lined with clay and polyliner, but that seems pretty flimsy in my mind if you have to store something for 1,000 years.
I'm just saying.
Just saying.
I mean, to put that in context, 1,000 years ago is, the Battle of Hastings. I mean, if the Anglo-Saxons had to put those containment processes, just about now, we'd be okay. A lot of things can happen in between.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I'm concerned about as a organic farmer, and lots of my friends are, is that in Virginia, they're talking about this uranium mining thing bringing $10 million into the economy. Every year, agriculture brings $69 billion into Virginia. And this could be damaged. A lot of people are concerned about the dairies and the vineyards and the farms around that area. And they're saying that, I just read this, they're worried about the stigma of having a nuclear project going on, a uranium project going on. And they're saying that harping on it will cause the stigma. Now, help me with this. If there is danger, talking about it doesn't increase the danger, does it?
Well, it increases the problems for the companies that are producing the danger. No, I mean, it's a terrible issue, and it's so short-sighted. I'll say this. The one argument that they make that I think has some traction is that we're talking about an area of the state that has an unemployment issue, a genuine unemployment issue, and that this would bring jobs to the area. Not as many jobs as they used to say. They were last year they were saying it would bring 1,000 jobs to the area. They've cut that down to about 300, 350, and they don't necessarily specify what the nature of those jobs. So I think we should be sensitive to that, and I think we should be sensitive to the fact that there are people who are hurting in that part of the state who need work, but this is such a short-sighted way of looking at that. Why would you cut your nose off to spite your face where there's a large agricultural product being produced there that you would do serious damage to? We know that when there's uranium mining, there is seepage. We know that it ends up in the soil. We know it ends up in feed animals. It ends up in milk, in dairy products from dairy animals. The effect that that's going to have on that industry's ability to sell its goods is going to be dramatic. And it's going to far outstrip anything that they get in the way of short-term jobs from this mining facility. And bear in mind that this mining and the companies that are involved in this have said if the price of uranium drops, they stop digging. Those people lose their jobs, So it's not like this is going to go on for a long, long time. It's more a question of, this is work that could come and go. It's a real issue.
Well, I think bottom line is this is being pushed by okay, some landowners, but mostly investment people from Richmond and elsewhere.
From Canada.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't – well, I mean, I'm talking about people locally who are just trying to make a quick buck.
Ah.
You know? And it disturbs me that they're willing to despoil the state, possibly permanently.
Yeah.
For a quick buck.
You know, I mean, they've put a lot of money into this. A lot of lobbying has gone on. A lot of money's been spread around. But I think, you know, one of the things we have going for us is that, you know, even the quote-unquote pro-business community, a lot of them are wary of what this could mean down, you know, down the line. Once it gets into the system, once you get uranium into the groundwater, once it gets into Lake Gadsden or something like that, you've got a big, big problem, and it's that's not going to go away. I mean, yeah, these people can all take their money and run, but I will say this: that the politicians who have to are going to be the ones who have to clean up after that. They're not. Some of them, at least, are thinking a little more seriously about it. I hope.
Well, I think there are. I mean, thankfully, there are people who are coming to their senses, and you know, you look at what's happening, and there's at least two statewide groups that are backing the ban, the uranium ban, the Virginia Municipal League and the Virginia Association of Counties. There are people like Mayor of Virginia Beach who are saying, yes, this is a significant risk to our water supply.
Yeah.
I don't understand how it got this far. And Scott, maybe you can talk a little bit more about some of the intrigue here. I mean, why is this suddenly getting pushed this way?
I don't know if I can talk too much to that. I can say that right now, I think the outlook for uranium, for the price point, is such that they think that they want to move forward with this. But bear in mind that the time frame on this is still, what, 5 to 8 years, something like that. It's going to be a while before they actually start digging. I think they think that they have a pro-business, shall we say, governor and a pro-business attorney general and a pro-business general assembly, and this is a good time to roll back a ban that's been in place for 30 years and has been generally good for the state. The other thing, too, I think we have to remember is that this is a foot in the door. Right now they're just talking about Pennsylvania County, but they found uranium in Fairfax County and around Fredericksburg. And once they get the nose of the camel under the tent, so to speak, what's going to stop them from doing it, you know, in other localities?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about some of the politics involved, and we heard back in, was it August, August 31st, in a phone call, the Virginia Senator Bill Stanley was asking basically for a delay from Pennsylvania supervisor involving a county board meeting to try, because he's basically said that we're waiting to push this, and it looks like now is the time they're pushing it.
Oh yeah,
in between the holidays here.
Well, you know, it was one of those things. I mean, what they're looking at is it's the second half of the General Assembly. It's a short session. The national spotlight on Virginia that we had last year, that we all saw so profoundly, those of us who worked on the women's reproductive rights issue. It was a harsh spotlight on the state, and they held off, hoping to get, I think, from the governor's panel, they expect to get a more positive, from their point of view, appraisal of uranium mining in Virginia. And I think that they think maybe they can sort of steal this one in the dark of night at the GA this year, and we plan on not letting them do that.
Right. Well, I think tomorrow night's meeting, or Tuesday night's meeting, the 27th of November, will be a good time for us to
Or yesterday's
move
meeting,
it. Technically. Yes. Yes, remember, we're recording this on Monday, broadcasting it on Wednesday, and in between is what they're calling the sixth meeting, the sixth public hearing. And it doesn't seem to be the same type of public hearing as the other five were, where they actually included the National Academies of Science studiers, the people that were leading that group. Do you have any information on who will actually be leading this uranium mining group meeting tomorrow?
It'll be the governor's panel. Now, I don't know who will be chairing it. I'm not exactly sure what members will be there.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be well attended by the public.
I think so. I think it's, you know, Science Museum's a good venue. And I think that, you know, people understand that there's a lot at stake here. And it's our last chance to really to get our voices heard before the GA comes into session. Mm-hmm. So speaking in hindsight, since it happened yesterday, technically,
yes.
I hope that a lot of people showed up, and I hope that that the protests and the voices from the public are heard and taken into account.
All right. Well, you are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio, recorded in the live room at WRIR, Richmond Independent Radio. Now, Scott Berger, tell us about the music we're going to have during our little musical interlude here.
Well, I pulled up an MP3 for one of the early Godzilla films. It's like an early version of the Jaws theme in my mind.
Okay. Well, let's listen to that for a minute and then come back. Site for Virginia Uranium Incorporated says that construction of the mine and mill will support 323 jobs and generate $35 in economic benefits. That's probably a typo. Annually for 3 years. 1,000 jobs for the 35-year lifespan of the mine, $5 billion in revenue for Virginia companies, and it'll generate $112 million in state and local taxes. Help me with this. Agriculture has an economic impact of $55 billion in the state annually and provides 357,000 jobs in the Commonwealth. And we know that people are very leery of simple things like, well, not simple, but GMO. People are very leery of that. People are very leery of radioactive food and radioactive water. The industries of agriculture and forestry together have a total economic impact of $79 billion and provide 501,000 jobs in the Commonwealth. Every job in agriculture and forestry supports 1.5 jobs elsewhere in the Virginia economy. How does that add up?
For people living around that area, it's a real issue. I mean, there's not going to be direct profit for them. You know, I mean, there's not something that's going to, it's not going to make their region better. It's going to be an issue. I mean, we're talking about a kind of mining that produces a lot of waste, and it's got to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, I mean, there are things you like to, you know, you like to say, oh, there's a vineyard down the road. No one goes, hey, want to go look at the uranium mine? You know, it's just, it's not, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's
I mean,
true.
It benefits a small group of people quite a bit. And, you know, I mean, one of the things I would point out, too, is this issue of jobs, because I really think it's the only place they've got traction. Mm-hmm. Because it's legitimate. I mean, there are people there who are looking for work. And for me, as a sort of progressive sitting in Richmond, to tell them, you know, oh, silly, you know, silly people in Pennsylvania County, you don't need those jobs. I mean, job's a job for a lot of people, and I'm sympathetic to that. But it's not going to be that many jobs, and those jobs aren't going to necessarily last that long.
Right, and I'd heard that you need special training to work in a uranium mine, and they might be bringing people in that
they're
already
most
have
sure
some of the
they're
training.
They're going to have to. The actual people working the mines, they're going to be often from other countries or from other parts of the country. I mean, I can't say exactly what these jobs will be, but I got a lot of them are going to be like service jobs and stuff like that, feeding people and things like that. You know, not to sound like a pie in the sky liberal, but wouldn't it be better if we put that money into wind power or into solar energy jobs that are actually going to be good jobs and jobs that'll last a long time?
Yeah. Great. Great. So tell me, please, what your name and what county you're from?
My name's Roxanne Chrisley. I'm from Roanoke County.
And tell me about the jobs that this uranium, if we mine uranium, what kind of jobs are there going to be?
Even before the uranium is mined, uh-huh. The studies and the tests that need to be done, there will be people employed that do those studies.
Uh-huh.
People that go to that area, that work there, will be bringing jobs to the area as well, because they'll have to house those people, they'll have to feed those people.
Uh-huh.
It will increase the economy in the area in which the studies will even be done. So the possibilities of jobs will start even before we even get to the part where we start mining uh-huh. uranium. Aside from that, the actual the administrative part of the mining, the testing part of the mining, the actual trucks and the equipment that will need to be built to do the mining, the actual mining itself, the transporting of the uranium.
Transporting it from
Oh, well, they have to transport it from where they have it to where it's going to be, if it's either shipped to another country or if it's shipped to a specific place in our country, wherever it's, the jobs are endless.
That reminds me of something I heard early on, and it was that the uranium mined here would create some energy independence for Virginia. How would that work?
Well,
if we're shipping it elsewhere.
Well, we won't be shipping it elsewhere. We're probably going to keep most of it here. Right now, we contract more of our uranium from foreign countries than we have for ourselves. We actually buy it from foreign countries.
Well, a lot of the uranium that's being used is being used by disarming nuclear bombs and things. A lot of that is being recycled.
No, our submarines are powered by nuclear power.
And
we have nuclear plants in the country. There's nuclear plants. We use nuclear energy in medicine. We use nuclear energy in pharmaceuticals.
Absolutely.
So it's necessary, and we're buying it from foreign countries rather than mining it ourselves.
So you don't want to buy it from Canada?
No. Why do we need to buy it from another country when we have our own? And we don't live in the 1960s. We live in the 21st century. We live in an era where modern technology does all kinds of wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the fear-mongering aspect of this has gone a little too far. People need to be a little bit more educated and a little bit more have some ingenuity and have some faith in modern technology. Mm-hmm. Granted, there's going to be natural disasters and things happen, but there is not anywhere in the that I know of. Nobody has died because of a nuclear problem. People have been injured. Some people might have been burned or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's places in Chernobyl where people still live today that are eating off their land and are eating animals that are right there in the areas where they were affected by Chernobyl.
So. Now, I understand that the leukemia rate around that area is really high. I don't
and you understand that from where?
From what I've read over the years.
Okay, well,
that they're still suffering from the impact of, that was a chemical spill, wasn't it, in
yes.
Chernobyl?
Yes.
Right, so let's go back to nuclear.
Yeah.
In the southwest, around where they're mining uranium in the deserts of New Mexico, there are people suffering. Their water systems are fouled. Their land is fouled. The rate of cancer is really high there. How do you think that we can avoid that sort of thing?
Well, like I said, those things were done. Those areas were mined in an era that's not this one. They have changed standards. They have changed technology. There are new things that have come around. They have taken resources from other countries that are doing the same thing. If you go to France, if you go to other countries, they're mining and doing things with uranium, and they're not having those problems. So it takes regulation, it takes responsibility, it takes people caring enough for all of the aspects involved. And that's where I think, just look at it and give it a shot. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing
it. But what if it fails?
That.
I mean, what do you do if there is a problem? I mean, we're talking about
if it doesn't work, then you stop. If it does, but we haven't even gotten to the point where we're going to even see if it works because they won't lift the moratorium to let them even do the tests.
Which tests are
they? Have to do a lot of tests and research and drilling and to see how far down it is and what the capabilities are to get it out of the ground. This moratorium is just allowing us to even do those tests. We're not going to lift it and then go in there and start digging it out of the ground. I mean, and if people actually would read that and understand that and get an idea of what's really going on, they would realize we're not asking you to lift it so that they can just go in and dig it up.
Right, it's a long process.
It is a long process.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not possible, then I'm sure the people who are pro will see that and they'll go, okay, we can't do this here. I don't think that it's. I just think people are being a little bit unrealistic. I mean, we live in a modern era. We live in an era where...
And you trust all technology?
I do. I trust technology, yeah. I'm not a fear-monger. I believe if you are prepared, you shall not fear. And I think that the Virginia Uranium Group and all these people that are pushing to have the moratorium lifted are doing it in a responsible way, not just for the industry itself, but for the people, because without the people, there is no industry. I mean, like that old, you have to have, here, Laura, sir, over here. I've got to go. Thank you.
Okay.
Patrick.
Roxanne, she's going to meet you, Patrick Collins. This is
Jim. Well, that conversation was quickly ended. I was just asking questions. Let's see who else we can talk to.
Still alive.
in the 70s, we were skating downhill toward renewable energy. We were all about conservation. We were concerned about the environment. We started the recycling projects. And then they all just disappeared, right along with the electric car.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things going on here. And this is where I sort of take my Sierra Club hat off for a second and say, you know, personally, we're getting what we voted for. I mean, Obama has been pro-nuclear. He just recently approved new nuclear plants in Georgia. That's outrageous. I mean, the Green Party candidate has been for moving towards renewable energy. She wasn't even allowed in the debate. You know, whether it's foreign or domestic, it's time for America to cut oil and gas from our energy diet. And the Green Party was founded on being anti-nuclear as well. Yet again, it's not part of the debate. So, I mean, you know, if the Sierra Club National is going to continue to endorse politicians like Obama, then we're going to continue to get politics like this.
Are you familiar with what's going on in Germany around renewable energy?
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Yeah, they're aiming for 80% within a certain number of years, but they might actually achieve 100.
Yeah, I mean, you know, speaking of pie in the sky, those Germans, they're so impractical.
And their engineering is so high tech.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where they get these numbers from. No, it's absolutely remarkable. The United States there are a number of places where the United States is just alone in how it views the world. Everywhere else, you'd be laughed out of politics for denying climate change. And here we have technically a major party that honestly doesn't believe it exists. So
you mentioned electric cars, and that's another thing that I have a lot of criticism for, because honestly, here in Richmond is considered a test market for electric cars. Where is that electricity going to come from? Why are we going towards electric cars if this electricity is going to be pushed by Dominion through nuclear power?
This has been about the most exhausting and perhaps the most exhaustive radio show I've produced. There will be follow-ups because there was a lot more information gathered at the Uranium Working Group meeting and the people I spoke with there, as well as during the interview with Scott Price and Scott Berger. There will be follow-ups. For now, just walk in the light and move lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening.